This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast. Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams. Good to have your company. Tech Talk, it's our opportunity each week to get together and explore the world of technology, whether that be high tech, low tech, or somewhere in between. Of course, Tech Talk, it's your programme. We're really keen to hear from you. Questions, comments, feedback, all very welcome. You can email those to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Good old-fashioned email or even a voice note. Is all well received. Tech Talk is first heard here on RNIB Connect Radio each Tuesday lunchtime at 1, or you can grab us as a podcast. Just ask your smart thing to play the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Coming up this week, we'll be finding out about the talking signage solution right here. Hubert will be finding out if it's possible to hear a solar eclipse, and we'll learn more about some new canes in the RNIB Products for Life store. A warm welcome in to my co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Chaps, what's going on in your technology worlds this week? Callum, I'm going to come to you first.
Well, I'm cautiously excited about something. There's an interesting project in the works, very early days yet, but there's an interesting app being developed called Project Tapestry, is its code name. And you know how since all the kind of, let's just say chaos at Twitter, people have kind of fragmented social media-wise. There's some people on Threads, some are on Mastodon, some are on Blue Sky. There's even still some people on Twitter or X. What this app is looking at is trying to bring all these social media platforms and all these kind of news feeds into just one app. So if you think of a bit like an RSS reader, where you can put the URL in and it just brings it things in from multiple sources, they're thinking of trying to do that, but for social media platforms. So you can just have everything in one place. But the interesting thing with this is it's from Icon Factory, who are the developers of the really popular Twitterific app. And they've already said accessibility is going to be a big focus in this one. And Twitterific was hugely popular, hugely accessible. So sounds interesting.
Will X be on there, though? Because wasn't one of the issues when Twitter changed, let's describe it as that, that access to third-party apps, particularly some of those that we relied on in the blind community, was effectively blocked?
Yeah, well, this is the interesting thing. I think this is the stage that they're looking at just in terms of how possible this is. I think they've said for most of the platforms, I mean, certainly for Mastodon and Threads and Blue Sky and the ones that are using these, is it Activity Pub, these open standards for social media, they're going to be possible, but they've already said X, probably not. And then the more closed off ones, you know, Facebook, Instagram, I think they're going to be a bit more of a challenge. I think X is, I would guess that X is probably a no-go. The others might be possible with some tweaking from them. So yeah, it's going to be a while off yet, but one to keep an eye on, I think, because if you're just fed up of switching between all these different apps and, oh, where was that article again? You know, where was that posted?
Right, and touch wood, it's hopefully going to be accessible. Icon Factory have got quite a good track record in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I was just saying, Twitterific, you know, I think that was one of the most popular apps, wasn't it, in the blind community especially?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that one and tweetings. Hubert, what have you got?
Well, how would you feel if you were guided indoors by a robotic guide dog that can not only guide you around objects but also talk to you?
Okay.
That's the latest project being worked on in at Glasgow University.
Right.
Yep. RoboGuide, it's called.
But hang on, when you say talk to you, what do you mean? Like, does it get you somewhere and then ask for a treat? Like,
where are the biscuits?
Yeah, supposedly it's able to understand what you are saying to it and be able to then generate appropriate responses. Exactly what you can talk about, I've not seen yet, but it's an intriguing concept that I've been reading about. Apparently, the prototype has been created and it works using AI and various sensors in order to scan the environment around you and be able to guide you around around objects and it's only an indoor solution at the moment, and it's still a way of actually a final version. But yeah, that is the prototype that's being worked on, yeah, at Glasgow University.
Well, it sounds like an interesting research project. I can feel the inbox groaning with angry guide dog owners saying they're not giving up like guide dog anytime soon, and I don't think you will need to. But we will watch it with interest. Something else that's grabbed my interest just over the weekend is that OpenAI are beta-ing a video generation tool. So you will be able to say to your AI, make me a video where these things happen with these people in this place, and it will apparently do it. Scary stuff. So we will follow that one with great interest as well. If you have any thoughts about any of that or something that's grabbed your attention in the world of technology, we'd love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks a lot. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Regular listeners to Tech Talk, of course, will be familiar with lots of different indoor navigation and orientation solutions, but we haven't heard much about RightHere on Tech Talk previously. RightHere is a talking signage solution which consists of three main components: an online portal, Bluetooth beacons, and a free mobile app. Organizations can tailor audio descriptions using a secure admin portal, incorporate links and telephone numbers, and maintain complete control over their audio signage system. Bluetooth beacons instantly deliver audio descriptions to customers, enabling visitors to easily pinpoint crucial spots, such as bathrooms and exits, or announce exclusive promotions or audible menus. RightHere smoothly integrates without needing any complex system setups, Wi-Fi, or even electricity. Edan Meir, I hope I've said that right, is the CEO and co-founder of RightHere and joins me now. Edan, welcome to Tech Talk. Good to have your company. Just tell us, what were the origins of RightHere? Where did this idea come from?
Pleasure to be here, Dave. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Yeah, we started that about 6 or 7 years ago in Israel. And the origins for that was my own pain. I am sighted, but I am going lost very easily. I have a horrible orientation skills. And I always said I'm one of those friends who is turning right, although it's clear that it's supposed to be left because we've just been there 10 minutes ago. So not knowing where I am or where to go is part of my story. And we thought if we'll be able to solve my orientation challenge to those who have even more severe orientation challenges, ultimately we'll be able to solve it to anyone. And this is how we kind of started to think about the blind and visually impaired community. At the time, my grandfather tended to be blind. So that's kind of probably the back of my mind worked. And yeah, and since then we kind of have been doing that, as I said, for about 6-7 years, not just in Israel, in some locations in Europe, but also here in the US, where I currently am. So that's how everything is basically started.
Let's talk about the technology. For indoor navigation and orientation, there are a number of approaches. You'll be aware of them, of course. What attracted you to Bluetooth? Why did you think Bluetooth was really the way to go?
That's a very good question. And you know what? Maybe once before explaining the why Bluetooth specifically, just for the listeners who are not necessarily familiar with the very important difference between navigation and orientation. Navigation is all about taking you from point A to point B. For example, take me to Dave's office and turn right, turn left, turn right, turn left. You've arrived. That's navigation. Orientation is more about knowing where I am, what is there, maybe what's around me, and understanding the space where I am better. It's not necessarily navigate us anywhere, but it'll help us better understand our relations with the environment around us. Maybe based on this information, we can navigate somewhere. Maybe we don't want to navigate anywhere, but just to explore the environment. That's writer's focus, orientation. And I'm giving this explanation because that's the use case that we're focusing on. And that's what led us to come up with the beacons technology as a perfect solution for that. I would say the beacons, Bluetooth beacons, got, I think, not a very good reputation in the past few years. And one of the reasons for that is because it's been used for navigation rather than for orientation. And for navigation, you need to have a lot of beacons. You need to do triangulations between them, meaning that you need at least three to know exactly where the user is in a very high accuracy. And that's caused a lot more infrastructure, a lot more mapping, routing, planning, and maintenance, and cost eventually to facilities. All of that together make this technology not very attractive. We took a different approach with orientation. If we want to know where you are, if we want to let the user know where you are, where he is, all we need to have is just a single beacon. And as long as he's in around the radius there, he'll be good. We don't need to know exactly if it's a one step to the right or one step to the left. He's still at the entrance to that building, right? Or he's still next to the elevator's lobby. So this approach helps us to pick this technology. And we're very happy with it. We obviously improved it very much over the years, and we're planning to kind of improve it even more this year. So that's the technology we currently are basing on.
How does a blind person utilize these beacons? How do I discover they are there? You know, if I arrive at a venue, how do I kind of pick up that, oh, actually right here is installed here and has been set up, and you know, how do you get me on board, as it were, when I arrive at a venue?
Right. So it starts, we always say their experience starts at home. You basically know where you want to go, or where that you're heading, and you can find in the app those locations that are right here enabled. The app, again, is free. So for those who haven't tried, you're welcome to just download it. And there's no sign in. We don't ask for your name or any other details, email or Facebook or anything like that. You can just start using it. And in the app, one of the main buttons there you'll see is the nearby locations, showing you the list of all the locations in your area that are right here enabled. More and more, again, are joining us almost on a weekly basis, I would say. Once you find the location that is available for you, the app also helps you to simulate that location before arriving. So you kind of build a mental map of the space before actually going there. We found that's very useful and very helpful in building the confidence of actually going there. And then, of course, there's a whole of the way to the destination, whether it's through outdoor navigation with GPS, through our app or other third-party apps, or just Uber, Lyft, or all the others. Once you actually arrive there, the app basically recognizes the beacons automatically. You can be basically passive. You don't need to kind of scan the area or do anything proactively, as long as the app is open and the Bluetooth is on. By the way, you can be on flight mode. We don't need a cellular connection or Wi-Fi at the facility, but as long as the Bluetooth is on and the app is open, at least in the background, it will start giving you the relevant prompts of the audio descriptions. By the way, pair your preference there. So you don't need to know exactly where it is in the facility. We're always going to meet you at the entrance, so you can count on that for sure. And from that point, we'll basically show you around of, you know, what is available for you.
In the literature, you talk about information in real time. Can you just elaborate a bit on that? I understand organizations are able to update the prompts. When you say in real time, that's like as you walk past the men's room, the app will say, here's the men's room.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, it's not real time in terms of, you know, there is a cat moving here or whatever that is that is actually there right now. But it's real time in the sense of, yes, once you're going through different points of interest around the facility, the app will, you know, will basically start talking to you and give you the descriptions as, yes, you are now next to the elevator on the third floor. You are next to the restrooms, ladies on the left, gentlemen on the right, or whatever that is. This can easily be maintained and changed by the facility if they want to. In most cases, it is kind of a set and forget type of system from the facility standpoint. So they kind of set up all the information just like they would do with signage, and that's it. But they can do more of, you know, Happy Christmas or Happy New Year or whatever they want to bless, you know, or greet the visitors that specific week. Or if there's an event in that specific auditorium that day or whatever that is. They can do that if they want to.
I mentioned in the intro, you have support for links and telephone numbers. And I know when I've tried similar systems in the past, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, if you need help, call. And then, you know, I asked the person running the system, like, okay, how do I now call that number that it just told me? They said, oh, you could just dial it. I go, well, I don't remember it. It said it so quick, like, you know. Yes. So just talk me, how does that work, those actions?
Yeah, it's and that's a good point. That's how this feature specifically, came to our mind. It's that, you know, you're going to a certain campus or area or complex, and you need some sort of help. And by the way, you're not necessarily, you're not necessarily blind or visually impaired. It could be anyone feels a heartbeat or whatever that is and needs some assistance at that spot, or just have a question. Instead of going to Google and search for this, you know, the website, and then to the contact us, and then talk to someone in headquarters, which is have no idea where you are and what you want, we basically associate the phone number of the person that is relevant to help in those cases. We obviously set it up together with the facility. And once you're there, you'll be able to, with a push of a button, have a phone call with that relevant person. It could be someone on the east side of the campus and a different person on the west side of the campus. So that's for the a call for local assistant. The other one, the link, is just a way for the facility to take you to an online destination that they think could be relevant. And the example I usually give here is a menu in restaurants. So you are at the restaurant and fine, you found your way around, you sit down and you want to know what's on the menu. So instead of scanning a QR code or anything from that sort, it's already there. Just open it up. There is a link inside. We have other use cases for this link. But yes, this is the link and the call for local assistant features.
Right. And on that example with a menu, would the whole menu be in the sign, or would you be recommending to a restaurant, look, put a link to, you know, an accessible version of the menu that would then be online?
Oh, so yeah, absolutely. So that's part of the beauty here. When we talk to the, you know, to the restaurant, hey, have a link to your menu, we obviously take care that, or at least take another pair of eyes looking and see if this menu is actually in an accessible format. And we let them know, hey, by the way, here's a room for improvement. You might want to make sure that your, you know, menu is accessible, generally speaking, before we put it in. So yeah, we do pay attention to that. Whether if it's a menu or it's any other form, sometimes there are, you know, we've seen it during COVID. A lot of time it was a kind of health form that the guest has had to fill in.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, I'm a Braille guy, right? I do use Braille, love Braille. Often though, the Braille menu can be a couple of versions behind the print menu, right? Because they didn't get it updated. You know, they got last year's menu, and that's in Braille. So. You know, would I be confident in if I got a menu through right here? It's going to be like the current one. It's not going to be a version they uploaded right 6 months ago or whatever.
Exactly. And another thing, you know, Dave, the app is in 26 different languages. So we a lot of our literature and marketing, I think, is around the blind, visually impaired community, which we were passionate about, and this is how we started and still focus on. But there is a very, I would say, universal design thinking behind this. So it's not just for the blind or visually impaired. It's for everyone, again, who has different orientation challenges. It could be a language barrier. So you might have, the menu there, but it's just not in Hebrew in my case, or it might be in English and you might see perfectly, but you cannot consume text because of dyslexia or other cognitive disability. So having these textual information that you have there, whether it's our signage, which is the main focus, or the menu or anything else in an audio format in your own pace, that's what's right here is about.
I noticed we went straight to the restaurant example, taking care of our hierarchy of needs. Yeah. But just share, if you would, some of the other environments and scenarios where right here has been proven to work well.
Yeah, so we've done in almost all sectors, I think, by now, really, from airports to hospitals to museums, shopping malls, everything in between. I find myself a lot of time talking about restaurants, and the reason is, first of all, it's surprising people. Who needs a wayfinding system in a restaurant, right? I mean, well, guess what? It can be helpful there. And restaurants are not just places to eat. They're also places to socialize. And that's what we really, you know, believe in here. It's not just for effectively, you know, find a specific point in the environment, but actually promoting inclusion. So outside of restaurants, and as I said, almost every sector, I would say at this point, we've had at least one or two case studies. Globally, there are over 2,400 right here enabled locations right now.
How do you ensure reliability in terms of, you know, connectivity? You know, we've all sat in offices where, you know, somebody's got the wrong Bluetooth device connected to the wrong phone, or I was just talking to somebody yesterday, you know, and they couldn't get their headphones to, they were trying to play me some audio from their phone, you know, and the phone kept pairing with the headphones, you know. Bluetooth sometimes has got a bit of a bad rap for those sorts of behaviors. How can you ensure the reliability?
That's a wonderful question, and it's part of our challenges. I must admit, part of our challenges is ensuring, you know, 100% reliability on this. There is no 100% reliability on this at this point. We are improving a lot on this. There's a few ways we do that. So one, you know, we're working on a subscription model with our facilities. So in order for them to actually renew it for the second, third, fourth year, they do want to know that it's working and it's effectively helping them, you know, with wayfinding at the facilities. And therefore, we do these checkups every once in a while, usually every few quarters, to see that everything is playing as expected. So this is one way. Another way is through our community. And I cannot, you know, emphasize enough how the community, you know, work is important to us, from the design of this app and the development, all the way to the distribution of it. You know, working together with the community to know what's worked and what could be improved. In some cases, we've learned that, you know, there was different challenges in that specific facilities because they've been there and it didn't work as expected. That helped us to really go back to the facility and improve. And that's also helped us from the first place a lot of times to even get the facility accessible. And I'm happy to talk more about it because this is something we are, we've recently actually added a new feature to that we call the unlock. And this is something that I think globally thinking on our growth is crucial to that in order to provide not just reliability on the system, but actually a higher distribution of locations that are accessible.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. Thinking about the design, can you elaborate on your thought process in terms of the user interface? Just talk us through some of those design decisions to ensure that the app is user-friendly for those of us who are blind or partially sighted.
Sure. From day one, first of all, even in our name, not a lot of people know that, but one of the reasons we called ourselves Right Here, and it's here, AGAR, like hearing, is because from day one, we realized that we are not our end users. And that's a challenge from a developer perspective. Not being your end user is a challenge, right? So we realized that the right thing to do is to hear, basically listen. The right thing to do is to listen to our users. And we've been doing that from day one, you know, working closely with the community. At the time, it was mainly in Israel. Today, we have a wider community globally. Understanding from them what is needed, what is expected, how can we do better. We have a very long, I would say, backlog of things that we want to add to that. The priority is what's making it really challenging, to be honest. What do we do first and what we do second? And I will also share that it's not just from the end user perspective, but also from the facility perspective. And this is an important point because, you know, I think a lot of times, at least with an industry perspective, the focus is almost completely on the end user and almost forgetting about the facility that needs to adopt it and what it means for them to actually do that. So we're kind of trying to balance these both, and each obviously user, the facility and the end user, are coming from, you know, different angles and different needs around that. That makes the priority a bit challenging, but in both cases, we're trying to involve as much as possible those who actually is going to use it eventually.
We were talking recently about Apple's new journaling app, and this was a stark reminder of how much data our devices gather about what we do, where we go, how active we are, what music we listen to, all of these things. And, you know, I've heard you speaking about privacy and data security. Just share what measures you have in place to protect your users.
Sure. So first of all, again, privacy is super important to us. And it all boils down, again, for the reason for existence. The reason for our existence as a company is to, you know, is to provide people with independence wherever they go. And I believe that part of this independence is privacy. Like, I don't want anyone necessarily to know where I went and where exactly there and et cetera. So there is no sign-in process in the app. Once you download it, again, as I said before, we won't ask your name, your email, your Facebook, your Twitter. We don't know nothing about you. And this is a huge challenge, again, to your previous question, you know, from a design and developing perspective. If you don't know who your users are, how can you involve them with the design, right? So we had to really pick them up and voluntarily asking people, you know, talk to us so we'll know who you are and so we can involve you with the process. And we're still doing that. If you'll go to our website under community, we're always looking for more volunteers to help us with this process. But yeah, we don't know nothing about our users, and that's one of the measurements. There is no use of the camera. We are considering maybe involving that in a later stage, but at the moment there is no use of the camera. So not even on the microphone, by the way, not camera, not microphone. Obviously, the speakers are available.
Let's talk about collaboration. You've worked with NFB and Lighthouse and others to get feedback from the community. What can you tell us you've learned from those collaborations?
Ooh, a lot. We've been learning a lot. I think one of the we're getting a lot of technical feedback on the app, right? On certain things that could be done more easily or more user friendly from using it. But on a broader perspective, I think what we've learned is that, you know, there are these organizations they're doing incredible work, really. I can only blast for all the wonderful work they do, but they do have different, you know, sometimes priorities. There's a lot of needs for the blind, visually impaired community, right? Wherever you go, what you're finding is just one thing that, you know, need to be promoted. It's not the only one. And therefore, you know, the priorities aren't necessarily meets, you know, the priorities that we put in, or at least for our scope. And then what's really helped us to understand is that at the end of the day, we also have to work closely with the end users, with the community, yes, through the organizations, but not only through the organizations. One of the things that we've seen really, really impactful, very, very effectively, especially in the past two or three months since we've started this Unlock initiative, is that the Unlock initiative is basically asking users to unlock locations and making them more accessible. In other words, we've seen that when users are asking for the accessibility in their area, in their neighborhood, and, you know, in their city, the responses are so much higher, like dramatically higher. And it makes sense because it's not us, you know, explaining this city hall or stadium or museum, hey, you have a problem, right? And here's a solution. They already understand they have a problem, and then coming to us to understand what is the solutions available. So I cannot iterate enough about, you know, the importance of engagement and involvement of the wider community. If any one of the listeners, you know, try right here or planning to try right here, won't find a location in the area, the best way to get more locations in the area is just to ask them to have something like this. You'll be surprised, and we can help you with that, by the way. We're happy to help you with that. And you'll be surprised how effective the responses are.
What's next for Right Here?
Ooh, I wish I could reveal it here, but soon, Dave. I hope you'll give me you know, the opportunity to talk about it again later this year. But we are cooking, and there's a few really exciting things in our oven right now. Some of them probably going to be available end of March, I would say. Well, for testing, they're probably beginning of March. But for, you know, their general use end of March this year. So definitely worth staying tuned. We do have our community growing on almost all different social media channels. But again, you can always come back to our website and talk to us. I think, in a wider scope, when thinking about the future, today, I don't know enough about it in the UK, but I can say, at least here in the US and in other places, we've seen, for some reason, when you know, the wider, the mainstream or business community think about accessibility as a nice feature or as a feature. And I personally believe that it's not. It's people's right. It's not a feature. It's people's right to have. So when you ask me about the future, I hope that the future right here is bringing, and there's an industry as well, is that having an audio format of signage is not a feature anymore, but the expectation, at least the very minimum even expectations to have in order to provide equality and inclusion wherever you go.
How can we try it? Where can we learn more?
So you can try it easily. Just go to your Google Play or App Store and look for Right Here, RIGHTHEAR, here like hearing, or Google it and find our website, www.right-agar.com. You can contact us. Our emails. My email is Idan, I-D-A-N, at right -here.com, and I'm always responding. Sometimes it takes me a bit longer, but I always responding, also on LinkedIn. And yes, please contact us. Please engage with us. We need you, to grow this movement around making the world more accessible.
Idan Meir, CEO and co-founder from Right Here. Thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
To be able to hear a solar eclipse. Well, are you intrigued? I certainly am. And now on RNIB Connect Radio, it's time to find out more about how you can hear a solar eclipse. Joining me from Harvard University is astronomer Alison Barilla. Alison, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about the light sound device. What is it and how did it come about?
The light sound device was developed in 2017. It's basically a sonification tool. And by sonification, I mean it takes sonification is essentially taking data and converting it to sound. So in this case, it's taking light and converting it to sound. So we developed this in 2017 in preparation for the Great American Solar Eclipse that went through North America. So this device is essentially... We developed it with the blind and low vision community in mind. So it's a way to observe a solar eclipse with sound by taking data and measuring the intensity of light. And as the light dims, the light sensor is measuring that and it converts it to a sound and its output. So you can hear it changing in the tone.
So when it comes to the sound interpretations, how was that decided as to how the sound scheme will work?
The way we chose to do it was the brightest light gets mapped to a flute sound. And then when it gets to a mid-range, it goes to something like a clarinet. And then the lowest sound, something you'd experience during like totality, goes to kind of a low clicking sound. So all of that can be changed in the code if you prefer different instruments. But that's kind of how we mapped it. And our thought process was, you know, the brighter light maps to like a, you know, a higher pitch kind of instrument, like a flute. And then during totality, which is something like the brightness of a full moon, there's this huge dynamic range from bright sunlight to totality, which is something like the brightness of a full moon. So we wanted, and we didn't want to take away from that, dramatic dimming essentially of light, and you know, so you have this dramatic change in sound as well when you get very close to totality. And so the low clicking basically doesn't detract from everything else that's going on, which is, you know, sometimes if you're in a crowd, people are cheering or clapping or crying. Just it's a very emotional experience. Sometimes you hear changes in animal behavior. So the clicking is meant to kind of let you know that the light has really dimmed, but not take away from everything else that's going on as well.
So let's talk about what happens on the day of a solar eclipse. What does the user have to do with the device in order to be able to hear the solar eclipse?
Yeah, so these devices are really straightforward to use. Basically, there's an on-off switch and then an audio jack. So the audio jack can be connected to a headphone, for instance. So if an individual wants to have kind of a personal experience with the device and on their own on the day of eclipse, some people, you know, may prefer to sit on a hill and watch the eclipse. You know, a user may prefer to, you know, sit there and listen as well. So it gives an opportunity to kind of observe the eclipse with sound individually. But another way that many, many groups are using the device would be to plug in the audio jack to a speaker. So, you know, you may attend like a large event for an eclipse. And so a lot of groups are having kind of like what we've been calling like sound sections. So, you know, it's within the larger group, but it's off to the side. And so you can kind of go there and experience the eclipse with sound in these groups with other people, and have that kind of shared experience, if you will. One other way that I thought was pretty clever that I went to the Albuquerque, New Mexico for the October 2023 annular eclipse that just happened. And some people there had some lights on devices, and what they did was they put in a Bluetooth adapter into the audio jack, and then what you could do is you could connect multiple Bluetooth headphones to the light sound device. So, you know, several people at one time can be listening to the same device. It's a really cool way to be able to, you know, still have it not be projecting sound, but having a group experience. And it's kind of a neat idea for kind of a teaching tool or something like that, where you can kind of be able to explain what's going on with the sound, something like that.
So do you have to be outside for this device to work?
The devices work with light. So any change in light, you'll hear a change in sound. The device is pretty sensitive. So, you know, you can certainly, you know, we use it as a demonstration tool before eclipses with just light bulbs or flashlights on your phone. So it doesn't, you don't have to be outside. But if you're observing the solar eclipse, you know, it needs to be able to measure the sunlight. So essentially, like if you were inside and had a window, you could put it, you know, I've actually, you know, seen and heard experiences of people that just put them in their windowsill. You know, their eclipses happen all times of year. Sometimes it's really cold outside. So yeah, you can absolutely put it inside a house. You don't have to be outdoors. It's just going to measure the change in brightness of whatever you're measuring.
When it comes to the availability of light sound, is this available to purchase for people anywhere in the world, or is there a limitation to only US customers?
Yeah, so this project is completely open source, meaning that all of our documentation, all of our code, everything you need to like build a device, for instance, would be online. We have instructions in English, Spanish, and French currently, because those are the eclipses that we mostly interacted with. So anybody, and we even have 3D printed cases, anything you need is online. So if a person or a group is interested in building these devices, they can go on our website and get all that information and build one or many of them. We also are funded through the National Science Foundation, through the Simons Foundation, and through the International Astronomical Union to build about 750 of these devices. And we're donating them at no cost to people that make requests. And that is worldwide. We have devices in Mexico and Canada and United States. There's a few outside of those locations, but right now we're targeting, you know, the eclipse that's happening, but absolutely people around the world can make requests. And, you know, we're really starting to think about what we're going to do you know, after this eclipse. We can't think about it too much because we have so much to do right now. We're building over 750 of these devices. So, but you know, eclipses happen all over the world and they keep happening. So what we'll probably do is after this eclipse, we're going to, you know, we reuse these devices. So we'll request that, you know, those that aren't going to use these for education or tool, like a teaching tool or an outreach tool, to return them to us. And then we'll keep redonating these devices.
If people were interested in requesting the light sound device or even getting the open source information to try and build one themselves, where can they go to do that?
On our website, it's astrolab.fas.harvard.edu/lightsound.html.
Well, that sounds intriguing. If you want to try that, then feel free to go to the website if you fancy getting a unique experience of a solar eclipse. But for now, Alison Barilla, astronomer at Harvard University, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much.
We've had an email from Elliot who wants to advise us that train ticket prices between the Trainline app and the Railboard app that we recently featured can be different, and you might find better deals if you shop around. Of course, there's the old trick of splitting your ticket and all that stuff. Now, we did look at Railboard, but more from a kind of a usability and accessibility point of view. I think it was you, Hubert, that did this one for us. Have you noticed any differences in pricing between the different apps?
Not too many for my specific journeys. I have noticed, for example, though, that when a Trainline for my regular work journey offered me a split ticket, for example, Railboard, I've not found a way to always get offered a split ticket. So I think there could be some price differences, and the way you get your tickets, possibly, there might be a difference there. Even though there's a difference in accessibility between the two apps, I think Elliot's correct in saying that it's good to keep your options open.
It's just, I get so baffled with train tickets, honestly. I mean, we use Trainline, as I said before, for work, and we're kind of, we have to book our travel through this, like, Trainline, you know, web portal that's tied into our company's platform. And it just, you'll get the same journey, the exact same journey, exact same time, exact same, you know, locations, and you can easily have like three or four or even five different prices. It's just crazy.
Well, let us know how you buy your train tickets and how you get the best possible deal. Thanks so much, Elliot, for getting in touch. We've also heard from William Richards, who writes in about the home button. The home button is the gift that just keeps on giving. But William has a tip and says that if you enable assistive touch, you can have a virtual home button on your screen. Either of you chaps tried this one?
I haven't actually used this myself. I have tried it a long time ago when I was just curious to see what assistive touch does, and I'd completely forgotten about it. But yeah, this is an excellent point. Yeah, you can have certain buttons just go along the bottom of your screen, similar to how it works with Android. You can probably get rid of this, but every time I've used Android, there's been three buttons that are constantly there at the bottom. There's back, home, and recent apps. And yeah, you can do a similar thing with assistive touch in the accessibility settings.
So if you're missing the home button on your all-screen iPhone, then maybe go into assistive touch and enable this. It may work, it may not work well for you. William says that, you know, having those extra buttons on screen before your app might, you might find that a bit of clutter. So let us know how you get on if that's something that appeals to you. You can, of course, just slide up and hold. That's the other way to get home. We've heard from Norma, who says that she particularly enjoyed Callum's demonstration of the groups feature in Be My Eyes because of the northern voice. Was this something you created, Callum?
No, so this is one of the new Siri voices. This was new in iOS 17. There's a couple of new, well, I think for the US in particular, there's loads of new voices, but for English, there's a couple of new voices, and Siri Voice 3 is the northern female voice that you heard there. Kind of subtly Northern, I think. It's still kind of posh, and then there's the odd word that just makes me smile that's very Northern, you know, button.
Button, indeed. So, Norma, if your iPhone will run iOS 17, then the answer to your question is yes, you can have the Northern female English voice on your voiceover. Yeah.
If you want it as your normal Siri voice, the one that you get when Siri answers your question, settings, Siri and search, and then you can change the voice in there. It's voice 3 for the English UK. And then for voiceover, if it's settings, accessibility, voiceover, and then speech, you can download the voice and change it in there as well for voiceover.
There you go. Hopefully that sorts you out there, Norma. Let us know how you get on with the Northern Lass on your iPhone. Right. That's it from the inbox this week. But if you have a question or comment you'd like to get in touch, then you can, of course, do that. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. As a blind person, I definitely wouldn't be seen out and about without my trusty white cane. But I am quite a heavy user of the cane, and I've got a drawer with a few broken ones. Well, here with a potential solution is Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life store. Louise, welcome to Connect Radio. Tell us, you've got a new cane.
Yes, thank you, Dave. So RNIB have introduced the all-terrain cane, and it's from a Werewolf Gear. And it was designed for those Arizonian trails, but you can still use the cane to take along for walks on the beach or along the snowy pavements or into the woods. What's really unique about this cane is that we would still have customers who would come into store and ask for a cane of 137 centimetres, but with the all-terrain cane, you can adjust that one height. So it's a really unique feature of the cane.
So this is really a cane for kind of off-roading.
It's
possibly not the cane that you're going to use around the shopping centre, is it? I've taken this cane up the Malvern Hills, for example, and that seemed like the right kind of environment because it is a little bit heavier, isn't it? It's a little bit chunkier than perhaps a traditional cane, yeah.
It is chunkier because it's got that super strong titanium alloy, and then it has the longer handle, so you can say for someone who wants to use it for a little bit of support when they're standing, you can actually wrap your left and right hand around the handle. So the whenever it's folded down, the grip, yes, when it's folded down, the handle is a little bit longer than your everyday cane.
Okay, so we've got that extra long grip, so you can put both hands on there. Maybe if you're coming down a steep hill or something like that, you've got the reinforced joints. And then it comes with a ball tip, but you can change the tip, I believe.
You can. So, yes, so anyone who likes a pencil tip, for example, you can change the tip on the cane, but it has to have that push-in feature.
Right, okay, so it's a push-on tip, and as you mentioned, the cane itself is adjustable height, so it's sort of one size fits most.
Yep, and it's adjustable from 130 centimetres to 155 centimetres.
So that's going to capture most
That'll capture
people.
Most, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you've got some alternative tips available, I believe.
Yeah, so in the March, we're going to have red, yellow, pink and orange rollerball tips available for anyone who wants to pimp their terrain cane.
Indeed, yeah. What colour does it come with?
At the minute, it's coming with red.
Okay, so that's a red tip, not the red band, not to just confuse
the red
with
tip,
the... Yeah, right. Okay, fantastic. And as we said, this is really like a 4x4 of canes. It's more for your off-roading. It's not going to replace your existing lightweight cane, but if you're somebody that likes to get out on the trail, then this all-terrain cane might be for you.
It'll be the one, yep.
Now, another popular cane that you have in store is the No Jab cane. Just explain, if you would, a little bit about how that works.
So the No Jab cane, so if you're walking out and about and you approach an obstacle, for example, instead of you getting the shock to your abdomen or onto your wrist, the No Jab will capture about 80% off that and it'll stop you from getting injured.
So it's almost like it's got a suspension system in there. There's like a kind of a spring inside the handle. So if your cane snags on a curb or a pothole or something like that, it just absorbs that impact.
It does, because it recoils approximately about 5 inches. So it'll just stop the shock.
Yeah, and my good lady, actually, she's had some medical treatment, and so it's really uncomfortable for her if, you know, the cane does sort of, you know, poke her in a kind of abdominal region. So it's much more comfortable for her to have this cane, and she says she wouldn't go back. So you've got the no jab now available in a...
The no jab, yeah. So it comes with the golf grip and the leather grip. And there's alternative lengths now for the no jab cane as well. They come with five sections, 3 to 4 or 5 sections as well.
Right, okay. So you've got the no jab now available in additional lengths. So if in the past it wasn't available in the right size for you, then maybe there is options there now.
Yes.
Okie dokie. And where's the best place to find out about the range of canes available?
As if you're fortunate enough to live near one of our Product for Life stores, you can look at these canes in store. So Belfast and Edinburgh are open Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's an appointment basis. And our London store is open Monday to Friday, and you can book an appointment with the team there as well. To book an appointment, you can phone the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or you can book online at shop.rnib.org.uk.
Yeah, and we should also say, I think, that it's really important that if you plan to use a cane, or you're somebody that feels like you need to learn to use a cane, then obviously contact your local authority and work with a qualified mobility officer who is best placed to assess your needs and give you the training that you might require.
Exactly, because the team in the Products for Life stores were not trained in mobility.
Right, okie doke. So if you're already a cane user and you feel like you want to avail yourself of one of those options, the all-terrain cane and the no-jab cane now available in a number of different lengths available from RNIB's Products for Life store. Louise Kenny, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me back.
That brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thanks as ever for your company. And if you like what you hear, do share with a friend. Always interested to reach new people with Tech Talk. So feel free to spread us on your social media or via email or anywhere else you feel is appropriate. We'll be back next week, of course. It just remains for me to thank the Tech Talk team, from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Callum Stoneman. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Drop.